Right, come on. We're ready to start recording podcast series 4, episode 6. Is everybody all here?
No. We're missing. Are they coming?
I don't know. Are they? Should we?
Where's Gary?
Where's Effie?
Where's Mike?
Isn't John usually here as well?
They're all in better places than we are. They're all either on holiday or at home or in Cornwall or Mexico or wherever.
Still, as John's not here, the podcast will be a lot calmer and a lot more peaceful.
Yes.
And hopefully we can get the right intonation.
Yes. Yes. We can all pronounce H properly.
That's right, H.
H. Which way's proper? I'd never know.
Blue Peter always used to say H.
That must be right then.
Must be right.
It must be right for the Blue Peter classes. Classes.
Anyway, without John's torrential stream of abuse and racism, we could get started. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Ben Everard.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And in this episode, we're having another lightning news blitz news, Nachrichten blitz of Kubuntu, Mac OS X. Who put that on there? Raspberry Pi, Microsoft. Who put that in there? Mid TV and Android and other stuff. We've got our discoveries of the week. Rants and Raves, which this month appears to be me again, even though it was last issue. and Ben will be speaking your brains and letting us know what happened in our open ballot. If that all sounds like fun and you'd like to subscribe to a paper version of this podcast, you can do so at tinyurl.com/lxfoffer1. And again, we've found out what the offer is. And that offer is that you pay for 8 issues and you get 13 issues. So that's more or less the equivalent of 5 issues for free. That's £51.92 for a year.
Bargain.
They really know what they're doing.
They do know what they're
doing. So now into the lightning news round, and first up is Kubuntu, who were dropped by Canonical earlier in the year, and they've now found a new commercial sponsor in Blue Systems, who will be employing their lead developer. What do we think of this, Andrew?
Well, we said at the time that this chap was dropped, that
Jonathan Riddle,
that it would only be a matter of time before somebody either started paying him to work, or the community took up the work, or something, and we were right. Hooray! Ooh.
It's fantastic, because I know Jonathan, I've seen him a few times at the Academy conferences, and he does a hell of a good job. He puts an awful lot of effort and love and passion into creating Kubuntu. But who's this company?
Blue Systems. I've really not found too much information about them. Their homepage just points to a list of other open source projects that they sponsor.
What we should do is we should see if any journalists know who this company might be, and they must have done some research on it.
Yeah, someone with like journalistic training who's paid to find facts out and transmit them to a wider audience.
Because they've sponsored lots of open source projects, haven't they, with a KDE bias, but where does their money come from?
No idea.
Their logo's got like a Debian swirl and then a little space man.
It's weird, mate. Really?
Yeah.
So maybe it's like Mark Shuttleworth. It's his secret cache of... financing,
like Mark, is it an anagram? Is check it out.
Okay, so moving swiftly on, Mac OS has been hit by by quite a major virus, infecting an estimated 650,000 computers worldwide. So,
no surprise at all. I mean, complacency is probably the biggest threat to things like this, and anybody can crack any system and break their way into it, and Mac owners sitting there smugly thinking that there's no way they're going to get a virus is just going to lead to a situation like this. I don't think it's bad for Apple. I don't think it's bad in any way. It's just modern life is rubbish.
Yeah, the fix had been released by Oracle for the vulnerability that they exploited about 6 weeks before, I believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it hadn't been pushed through.
So Apple have failed in not being able to roll out a security update.
Yeah, and they're still... they're still working on a tool to completely eradicate the virus once it's been discovered.
The thing is that if this had been discovered on Linux, it would have been discovered, 6 months ago before it infected all of those people, and there'd have been a patch for it by now, and it would all have been fixed.
Well, there is a patch for the vulnerability that it exploits, and that has been for a while.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it would just been pushed onto your most systems in the update. And, So back onto more Linux stuff. Raspberry Pi has passed their CE testing, and they're hoping to start shipping next week. So, Andrew.
That's marvellous.
That is fantastic, because we plan to do four pages on it in the issue we just started.
Yeah, they have said that they've already shipped to developers, so we might be getting our developer.
Oh, yeah, they did soon. Promise to send us a couple. I mean, I haven't checked my order status, but I think it said May, so I guess it's the queue.
I got one just telling me that it was being held up while they tested it, and they'd let me know once they had more information.
Right. I can't wait. I still feel excited about it.
Yeah.
They are pretty good with the flow of information, aren't they? They're letting people know. There's no, like, unspecified production delays. They're being quite open about it.
I thought this would be a lot worse. I thought that they'd find a problem and they'd have to go back to China for some kind of modification. So the fact that it's passed and it's only taken a couple of weeks is great.
Yeah. Excellent. And Microsoft, in other news, has made it into the top 20 list of kernel contributors.
Wow.
This is almost entirely due to some drivers to help it work when virtualized on a Windows system. And so, what do we think of that, Graham?
I think it's a bit of a non-news story. I know that it's been big on the internet and everybody gets up in arms about it. Mark Shuttleworth has responded to the usual chain of criticism that flows back to Canonical and its lack of upstream commitments. But, you know, Microsoft are doing it to strengthen their own products. They're not doing it to strengthen Linux. It's great that Microsoft has kind of had a software development spring in realizing that open source free software development isn't the threat that it originally did or Obama said it was. That's fantastic. I think the release of ASP.NET stuff from a couple of weeks ago was more important. I do wish Canonical did more of a contribution upstream.
Well, everybody, all companies that contribute to the Linux kernel only do it to increase the strength of their commercial offerings. And Red Hat is the prime example.
That's very true, but I mean, Red Hat's contributions don't make our lives any... I mean, Red Hat's contributions do make our lives better as Linux users. Microsoft's contributions don't, unless you're actually using their products.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing about this that I think is that they've actually contributed the patches upstream. Obviously, they were required to release the code under the GPL, but they're not required to do all the maintenance required to get it into the actual kernel.
No, that's good, yeah.
So I think it's excellent they are actually doing that.
I mean, it's great. I mean, it is great that we're on these kind of terms with Microsoft now. It feels good.
Moving swiftly on, MythTV 0.25 has just been released. That's their first major release in 516 days. So, what do we think of that, Andrew?
Was it 516 days since the last big release because the developers are lazy and feckless? Or is it 516 days since the last release because it's like a shark or a crocodile and it's reached evolutionary perfection and there's just no need to tinker with it?
I cut and pasted this off the website this morning.
I don't think there's any project like it. I mean, I don't actually run a MythTV box at the moment. I did for a couple of years, but I'm still subscribed to the MythTV developers mailing list, and it's the most active mailing list I'm subscribed to. Dozens and dozens of messages every day. There's stuff happening all the time, and it's frustrating, firstly, that it takes them so long to do a release. They did promise they'd release more often. And secondly, that they have such stupid version names, because this should be version MythTV 3.0. You know, because it's a major release, there's lots of accelerations, lots of new audio codecs. You know, MythTV is now completely modularized. You can skin it. It's a fantastic system. But XBMC is snapping closer than it heals, especially as it sounds like it's a lot easier to set up and configure. And that's something MythTV still hasn't addressed, how difficult it is to set up.
Okay. Excellent. And in the next news item, Android has merged its features, or some of its features, in with the mainline kernel. Do you think of that, Andrew?
Well, again, as with Microsoft, Google's only doing it to make money. It makes no difference to me as a day-to-day Linux user. All of the accusations leveled at Microsoft can just as easily be leveled at Google.
Yeah, and actually the same could be said for the accusations we make at Canonical, such as Canonical changing the name of the kernel to the Ubuntu kernel, when in fact Android... Where are the references to Linux in any of Android?
Yeah. But as someone pointed out on our forums, that Fedora call it the Fedora kernel as well.
That's true. Yeah. That is very true. Yeah. But only Canonical pays big fat wallets, big fat brown envelopes full of used £5 notes.
That is true.
So we have to praise them all the time. No, I think it's grand, you know. It just shows the you know, Linux expanding, taking over the world, and we know that Android is where, how it's going to do that. We know that this is not going to be the year of Linux on the desktop, but it already is the Linux, the year of Linux in your pocket on your handset.
I think for a long time, it's been a long time since there was any kind of upstream kernel merge from the Android project, and I think for I think it's been a couple of years. And it looked, I remember thinking about this 12 months ago, it looked like it might never happen, and in fact effectively Android had become a fork. So in those terms I think it's fantastic, you know, Android is once again a fully fledged member of the Linux kernel world and the Linux world, and also shows that Google's committed to the future of Android within the Linux kernel.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I was starting to think that it was going to become a fork and a separate project, and yeah, you know, you're right, it doesn't as a day-to-day Linux user affect me that much, but as a day-to-day Android user it does affect me a lot, because it means there's so many more eyes on the code. It means that the code's going through the same scrutiny that all Linux code is going through. So hopefully it'll make, if not Linux better, certainly Android. And our final lightning news item is that the UK government has decided it needs to know all and everything about us in absolutely real time without possible delay, because that would allow terrorists to win. Graham, what do you make of this?
Well, I guess I might say more about it in the open ballot. Essentially, I think it's a very bad idea that cannot be implemented. And sets a terrible precedent.
You're being slightly ambiguous there, Graham. Is there something you're holding back?
That's. I mean, I really, I'm not a particularly political person, but this really has annoyed the hell out of me. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and you're right. We'll come back onto it into the open ballot. But Andrew, anything you'd like to add at this point?
Yeah. Well. I think Graham's wraps it up there, really. But. Any new law can always be abused, and the further reaching that law is, then the more potential for abuse there is. For example, when Iceland's banks went bust, didn't Gordon Brown stop Iceland businesses doing,
because of the anti-terrorism?
And he was allowed to do that under anti-terrorism legislation. Which, I mean, they clearly weren't terrorists. They just made a couple of dreadful mistakes with a decimal point, and the, you know,
that's right. Why you wrote what you did write about Iceland? I've got it now. Iceland, the state of terrorists.
Iceland, state of terrorists. Yes, tune in to Linux Formats issue 158 for more Icelandic terrorism.
Okay, and that brings us to the end of the lightning news round.
Excellent, thanks Ben, which takes us on to discovery of the fortnight, which is going to be a short one, I think, because there's only three of us and mine is very short discovery. Shall I go first? Mine is actually a discovery that's been flagged up a couple of times this week on things like Linux.com, and it's an SSH replacement called Mosh, M-O-S-H. It's not really a replacement, because it actually uses SSH to negotiate the protocols and security and for encrypting packets. But what it does do is it allows for intermittent connectivity, and also there's no wait from the server when you're typing in commands, which you do get with SSH, same as Telnet, which makes it perfect for using prompts and command lines from mobile devices and from, you know, your intermittent networks, and because when you make an SSH connection, if you lose the connection, the whole session stops. So whatever you're doing finishes. And the way of getting around that, I think most of us use Screen. So basically, Mosh is like Screen plus SSH in a single package. And that's it.
Excellent.
I haven't actually used it yet. It uses SSH to make the connection, and then it switches to UDP, presumably encrypting the UDP packets with SSH. So it should be quicker and perform much better on lower bandwidth. That's it.
Awesome.
Ben?
This week I've been playing around with Ubuntu 12.04, at least the beta version of it. And given how much I hated it when Unity first came out, I was actually quite surprised that it's actually not too bad.
Oh, excellent.
And yeah, obviously the HUD is the major new feature. And it needs some tweaking, but I can definitely see the potential there. And I'm not going to switch to Ubuntu soon. I'm going to wait for them to sort of polish it up, go through a few versions, but I could see myself using it again, maybe on version 13.
What's your current distribution?
It's Mint, but I think I'm going to switch to OpenSUSE pretty soon, because Mint's being a bit flaky for me.
Well, that's I'm really pleased that it seems like they're coming out of this dark tunnel of Unity development.
Yeah, and I think the lenses are quite good as well.
The lenses are specific to the types of searches that you do in the shell.
Yeah, which sounds a bit sort of vague at first, but you can sort of add it, like, there's the Ubuntu TV lens, which allows you to pull videos from sort of TED, YouTube, all this sort of stuff.
Do you know you're using the Ubuntu TV lens? It's been a while since I used it. I mean, how do you use the lens? What does it do?
It just gives you a search box that brings up videos, basically, but it collects them from all the video sources. You're not just searching ones you have or ones that you've...
Okay, but it's not. It's a single prompt for all of the lenses.
Yeah, and you just switch between them.
Right, okay.
Yeah, there's just a little option to search for files, applications, and the different... I think music's one of the lenses, and TV.
So what if you search for the name of a video in the applications lens? Does it turn up with no results?
I don't know.
Because one of the things I like about GNOME 3 and that I like about Google is that you can just search for have a search term, and then it presents you with, you know, these are the news items we found matching this. These are the videos.
And that's how GNOME Do did it. And
I think there might be a sort of universal lens, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Right. Well, there'll be more on next issue's cover feature.
Absolutely. Next issue, which is the issue after
5.9,
isn't it?
Yeah, this is not the one that's on sale yet, but this is the one that we're planning. When in fact Ubuntu is out.
Not before.
Yeah.
Oh, will that cost $7.99 as well? It will actually be a bargain of £6.49.
Yes. Unless you subscribe.
They know what they're doing.
Unless you subscribe.
In which case, it could be one of your 5 free issues.
Yeah. Andrew? Discovered anything?
Yes. My laptop, one of the keys broke. Ages ago, and the speaker broke, and then I tried to reinstall Windows 7 just for a laugh, and that wouldn't work. And this all happened about 6 months ago, but the warranty only ran out yesterday. So the day before yesterday, I took it into PC World to get them to fix it. And I didn't need to produce any supporting documentation. I just told them, as it should be, I just told them, this is my name, and this is where I live, and then they've got a record that I bought it from them. So you don't need to wait, you don't need to faff about finding a receipt or a credit card proof of purchase or anything like that, because they've got the information there already. And and it was just really easy to get them to fix it, so they're fixing it now. But the first thing the bloke did was, I showed him the broken key, and he put his sort of finger on it, and just sort of jabbed it down on this broken key, and did that for about 30 seconds, just like pressing the button over and over again, as if, you know, somehow he could magically fix it, as if I'd not tried that before.
I thought you were going to say it did work.
So that's what we do. That's what computer technicians do, obviously.
Like, yeah. Just, turn it off.
Turn it on again.
Sorry.
Yeah.
On that note, my Seagate 2 terabyte hard drive failed for the second time in 2 years last week. So, don't buy Seagate hard drive.
I bet that was quite expensive, wasn't it?
Actually, I got it at a special deal rate. It was about £80 or £90 when I bought it 2 years ago. I don't know what the price of data is.
It'd be about £10 now, probably.
Thanks, everyone.
That brings us roughly to the halfway point of this podcast. Still to come, we have Rants and Raves, Speak Your Brains, and our open ballot.
Right, now it's time for Rants and Raves. Sorry for everyone who's tuned in to hear John rant about something. Andrew and Ben are going to try their best. Are you going to rave about something, Andrew?
I'm going to rave, yeah.
So we'll make Ben goes first so that we can end on a positive note. I'll just get my Android stopwatch up here.
Incidentally, if any major well-known Android handset manufacturers want to send us a couple of extended review models, then we won't say generic Android device.
We'll
give you a name check.
Yeah, we also need an audio interface with more inputs than 4. Okay, you ready, Ben?
I'm ready.
Okay, go.
Okay, my rant is about governments and IT. Don't ask me why, but governments seem chronically incapable of doing anything right with IT in general. And I don't think this is limited just to the UK government. We've obviously seen in recent months what a phenomenal mess the American government can make with their SOPA, and the European government is spectacularly bad at it as well. And this isn't just from legislation side of things. In my previous life, I was a consultant for a fairly major organisation working in the public sector, and I can tell you that they're phenomenally bad at actually organising their own IT as well. Still 20 seconds left to go.
It's a beautiful day outside. I think actually just leave 10 seconds to contemplate what you said, because it was what you said was very important. I completely agree. Just look at the NHS. Look at that big IT scheme.
The European Farms Single Payment System.
Is that bad too?
Well, they designed bespoke software for it when there were only about 200,000 farms in the thing, so a couple of spreadsheets would have done it.
Isn't the main problem that the people that have the money, the people who finance these projects, actually have no knowledge of how computers work or IT works?
Yeah. Although I hear the Munich City Council computer system works quite well. Yeah.
If anybody needs like a troubleshooting team to be dropped into their IT problems, in Munich, you know where to go. What should we call ourselves? The X team.
I did actually write to my MP and offer to demonstrate to him exactly why the proposed legislation won't work. But he's told me he can only reply by snail mail. Which probably explains
says everything
it.
We need
That's
to know.
Brilliant.
All right.
I hope he bought his stamps before the price went up. He won't have done that, will he?
Okay. Ready, Andrew?
Yeah.
So Andrew's going to rave about something. Go.
This is a stealth rave. It's a bit of a rant with a bit of a rave at the end. The terms and conditions for PayPal are 36,000 words long. That's longer than Hamlet. And Hamlet is long. Hamlet made my bum go really numb when I watch it. A shorter play by...
What were you sitting on?
I was sitting on a chair.
Okay.
The T's and C's for iTunes, 19,000 words. That's longer than Macbeth, and Macbeth is a really short play. Contrast this lame, flabby, flaccidness with the GPL-3, which is a mere 5,700 words long. And the great thing about that is that it's so readable. The GPL-3 is written in proper normal English. It's not written in, you know, horrible legalese nonsense. They've done the thinking, so you don't have to. It's really simple. Free software guarantees simplicity in legal terms. We can do what we like with it as long as we fulfill certain of the conditions. It's not tied into a horrible commercial mess like all the rest of them.
Excellent, excellent. I'm surprised you didn't mention the GNU Manifesto.
It's a rave. It's a rave.
Thanks, Andrew. That was brilliant.
It's true, though. You can sum it up in Stallman's Four Freedoms, or Three Freedoms, or however many freedoms he's got. It would be easy to remember if he didn't start at zero. But, you know, Facebook's terms and conditions, 11,000 words.
Aren't they all about obfuscation? Aren't they all about not making you read
of course,
and not making
yeah.
you... So
of course.
That's why they're long.
That's why it's long, and that's why the GPL is short, because it's the opposite. Mm. The GPL, the people that wrote the GPL, want you to understand. They want you to have control over your data. They want you to know the limits on computing.
Excellent. Okay. Speak your brains. It's me again.
Speak your brains.
Okay, well, we've had one Speak Your Brains. So thank you very much to Russell Hay for keeping this section alive for another episode. It's a rather big email. I did read it, so I was just thinking if I cut it short. Anyway, I'll start at the beginning. Not sure if this is a Speak Your Brain slot or not, but here's the niggle. I've always wondered about... Oh, this is a good one. This is good. I remember now. I've always wondered about with Linux and BSD. Now, I'm the first to admit that I've never run BSD properly, only FreeNAS. And from a user's perspective, it's still got the GNU tool set, so it's 99% the same to install, just reduced support for various bits and bobs. I've got it running on an old box and it runs nicely. Anyway, there's always FreeBSD fanboys talking about how great FreeBSD is because it's how Unix hackers would have written a Unix successor, whereas Linux is how PC hackers wrote a Unix successor. The greater throughput, the better security model, the scoffing at our proc system. They replaced that mess a long time ago, apparently, and that it's much better for running your web servers on instead of Linux. So What's the point-by-point comparison? Why has Linux, or Linus, looked at features in the BSD and decided not to incorporate or replicate them? Why does the enterprise business standardize on Linux instead of BSD, as there's not a whisper of BSD out there in the corporate world? Is there a Linux roadmap that says someday we'll get there, or is it a deliberate rebuff for the BSD folks out there? That was his point. I think it's a really interesting question. Why is BSD not used more out in the enterprise? Any ideas, Ben? No. I just looked like you had an idea then.
I mean, I think to a certain extent, it's just that there's so much support behind Linux at the moment, just in terms of the number of people who know about it, who use it, and that just isn't there with BSD. Not for a technical reason.
Yeah.
For whatever reason in the past, Linux has become a buzzword.
People like Facebook and Google have probably looked into it, and maybe it comes down to performance. I mean, presumably they'd just use BSD if the BSD kernel gave them a few more cycles for their number crunching.
It's I think the big difference. I mean, I've got no idea what the technical differences between BSD and Linux really are, but the one major difference for an end user is the number of applications, and that really again comes back down to the license that developers are unwilling to. To write stuff knowing that somebody else might just put a nice GUI on it and then flog it for.
But you can put GPL applications on top of BSD. It's just the kernel that's under the BSD license.
You can, but maybe, I don't know, maybe it's become tainted by association.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Mike was quite happy giving MicOS away under the BSD license because he just doesn't care. But then if you want your name to be associated with your work for all time, then GPL is what you choose.
Yeah. But just one note on the Google and Facebook. Part of the reason may be because of the development model. If Google or Facebook want to change something slightly in the kernel, if they find a bug and they need to fix it, they can do that and merge it into the kernel. Whereas BSD tends to be much more closed circle of developers.
Yeah.
Kind of do it themselves and you get what they give you.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, interesting question. Thanks, yeah. Russell.
If you do fancy, you know, a more wide-ranging discussion of the differences between like the ideologies that go into various free software operating systems, you could do a lot worse than buy a Linux format next issue, because we've got a roundup on
alternative OSs.
Yeah, so that's 6 pages talking about the philosophies and other things. Graham, you read it probably in more depth than I did.
Well, that's the great thing about free software. There's some brilliant alternatives. That's what it's about. I mean, you may not switch to them full time, but just the fact that people are scratching itches and keeping things like BIOS or the Amiga OS. I mean, that was news. I was almost tempted to talk about the fact that Jack Trammell died. He was the founder of Commodore and was massively influential in getting the Commodore 64 into 20 million homes. And, you know, that Jack Trammell's kind of legacy is that people are still making alternative operating systems and releasing them under free licenses. Yeah. It's brilliant.
And there will be a selection of different operating systems on next month's DVD.
Times are hard. Times are hard.
Including PC BSD.
I think we should go out busking at lunch.
Right, let's move swiftly on to our open ballot, which isn't really a ballot this time in the sense that we didn't really ask a yes or no question. Instead, the question was, blah, 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 civil liberties. What is the best method for making our protest heard? If we sign e-petitions, will our voices be heard? Should we meet with our MPs, donate to the Electronic Frontier Foundation? Should we dress as penguins and camp outside 10 Downing Street? Or do you have any better ideas? This is in protest at the recent snooping legislation that Ben spoke about in the news. Just reading through the comments, not many this time, but it made me think of Spitting Image. No, why isn't Spitting Image out back on the screens?
Yes, you're right. It's the ideal forum for this.
Instead of writing for Tux Radar, I think that our readers should resurrect Spitting Image, because there's some stonking ideas. Let's kick off with semi-anonymous Penguin, who says, one or two politicians caught having naked online chat ought to kill the whole discussion. Who's up for some entrapment? Which politicians, though? George Osborne? Who are we thinking of?
Theresa May.
Who can we most easily imagine naked? Ray Woods says, maybe everyone should include phrases like bomb, secret meeting, and device in all their communications, plus a paragraph of meaningless characters for an encrypted section. Yauge starts off with sorry for the aliens quotes, but I can't, I mean, where is that? He doesn't say they come out at night mostly, which is the only aliens quote I know. Derek Eakins says the law does not go far enough to ensure proper security, as anyone is still free to interact without using email, phone, etc. We should propose an extension to the law that requires every person in the UK to document any interaction with another person. Then a true picture of who is talking to who can be painted. In order to prove the usefulness of such a system, we could even implement it ourselves. A website and app that lets you fill in who you have spoken to would be fairly straightforward to write. It could then email your local MP each time you have a conversation.
And he can write back to you.
Yes. A flood of useless information would surely let them see their folly. That's quite true. That's absolutely true. Susie Denmark says, EU countries need to transpose these directives into law. No, that doesn't make any sense. Forget Susie Denmark.
Obviously, English isn't her first language. No.
Carlos the Jackal says, we could always go dark, switch off our computers and phones, communicate with each other via small ads page in Linux Format magazine.
I like that idea.
But the end of saying, it would mean that a normal text message to my mum about what I need from the shops would take over a month to be delivered and responded to. But at least the man wouldn't know what my favourite breakfast cereal was. Yeah.
Brilliant.
I hope you two are thinking up similarly humorous ideas by the time we get to the end of these. Rekios says, I'm not worried, just so long as they don't find out about the bombs I'm storing at Wansleybury Fisher's place to sabotage the Queen's Jubilee. I'm not worried. They don't monitor this site, do they? Yeah, that was a joke. Any security services listening, that was a joke.
We assume that's a joke.
My thoughts, Jerubi says, first of all, I live in America, so this doesn't directly affect me. Oof, the lessons of Martin Luther King have not been heeded there. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Finally, Richard Stallman says, all you had to do was listen. I tried. Oh no, here's a good one. Spooks Radar says, instead of return to sender on the envelope of junk mail through my letterbox, I'm going to provide a return address of 10 Downing Street instead. If they want to read my mail, they can effing have it.
That's brilliant. I mean, there weren't many, but that was fantastic.
I just giggled my head off there.
I don't actually want to make any serious point after that, because I think that it perfectly illustrates the lunacy of the situation.
And truth is more absurd than fiction.
After that fantastic selection of comments, thank you very much for listening. This is the end of the pod.
Hang on, I've got one last thing.
Oh, Andrew, what is it?
It's that anyone looking for a really well-written one-page review of an Ibanez electroacoustic guitar should pick up the current issue of Total Guitar, on sale at all good newsagents, and turn to page 140, and then write to the editor and say, I want more reviews like that.
And can you give him a guitar, please? Okay, brilliant. Thanks. Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks to you all for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.